Welcome to episode 63 of the Shannon Plan. My name is Kyle Posey. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Akash. Akash, what is up?
What's up, KP? I'm dry, at least. Did not go to Levi's Stadium this weekend, unlike some crazy fans. I was at home, comforted my couch, heater on, watching the game. Thank God I wasn't there in person to watch the 49ers this week.
That would have been very tough to watch in person because it was a frustrating game to watch. 49ers drop their fourth game in a row against the Colts. And boy, oh boy, do we have some things to talk about. Please, before we get in there, rate, subscribe, review, leave us five stars, whatever it is you get your podcast. Okay, so instead of, you know, just breaking down the game like we normally would, I want to talk about what this says about the 49ers and, you know, are they a contender? What this means to them as a contender. So when you lose to the Colts, if you just look at the other teams that they have played, so yeah, go ahead, go bring it up, because the teams that they are beating are not playoff contenders. The teams who beat them are. And by that I mean, so they beat the Seahawks, the Seahawks beat them with Russell Wilson. But in my head, the Colts are a team that are supposed to be the ones that they're really good at punching up. They're a pain in the butt. They're going to stick with you, make the game competitive. But good teams find a way to beat them. Like, good teams will pull it out. They're not supposed to be this team that that you aren't able to get around, that you aren't able to get over top of. And that was an issue for the 49ers. It seemed like they had it. It was 12-7, no struggles. And then Deebo Samuel fumbles the ball. And from there, everything goes, you know, in the worst way possible. It was almost like Murphy's Law from there on out. They couldn't get really anything going on offense. They got some terrible breaks on defense. Obviously, the pass interference calls and whatever Drake Kirkpatrick was doing on that final touchdown. But a lot of things went wrong, and that's where I have the biggest issue. Like, you should be able to beat the Colts because most of the good teams do that, and the ones that don't, it says a lot about you. So what do you think about what losing to the Colts says about the 49ers as a contender?
When the game started within the first, you know, 6-7 minutes, I thought this was a dream start for the 49ers. Opening drive, touchdown, Elijah Mitchell looked fantastic, and it looked like the offense had found some mojo. Defense, first possession, turnover, you know, offense gets that short field. And so I thought everything was going as, you know, the 49ers would have expected. I thought maybe coming out of the bye with that intensity, home crowd, everything, it had the momentum like, okay, there's a chance they can just run through the Colts and maybe they found something. And then it was the 49ers of 2021 where the offense just sputtering, you know, mistakes, whether it was Jamichael Hasty falling down on that third down or quarterback missing reads or missed blocks. And then defensively, horrible pass interference penalties that, you know, just give up chunk yards to opposing offenses. It just kind of the same old story that we've had with this team through what, seven weeks. And there were two key stats that I thought stood out that kind of defined why the 49ers lost. Third down, they were 1-for-11 on offense. And then penalties. I think they had 7 penalties for 122 yards. Those were the only two things that really were different than the Colts. They gained about the same yards on the ground. They both threw for about the same yards. Everything else, you know, stacked about the same. It was really just the penalties and the fact that the 49ers were so bad on third down. And, you know, both of us expected them to handily beat the Colts. We thought they were the better team. We thought they were at home, better coached. Yet, you know, for whatever reason, this team just cannot get, you know, get out of its own way. And I always look at like a well-coached team in a couple areas, A, penalties, and B, turnovers. And this team just seems to struggle in both of those facets. And they don't consistently execute for 60 minutes. And ultimately, I think that's like a coaching problem, a focus problem, like a leadership problem within the locker room. And ultimately, that's why I don't think they're necessarily a contender. Now, that being said, they're only a game out of a wild card spot. I think Football Outsider says they've still got like a 28% chance to make the playoffs. So they're still within reach. But right now, what we've seen through 6 weeks, this team absolutely is not a contender. They've got way bigger problems to figure out.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan mentioned that he was in a funk play calling. He hasn't really been able to get into a rhythm. So let me read you Elijah Mitchell's carries to start the game. He went for 4 first down. He went for 5 on his second carry. And then he went for 20. 14, 14, and 12. He did not receive another carry on the drive where we went for 12, and they had to settle for a field goal. When he is going like that, when they were getting the type of movement they were up front, and he had some pretty nice running lanes to run through, you would think that, you know, he would be able to get the ball more. That did not happen. But on those third downs you mentioned, and we'll go over those a little later, but I thought a lot of those were on the players, actually. I thought Shanahan did a good job of designing third downs, and for whatever reason, whether it's blocking, drops, errant throws, they were not able to convert. But I do think it says more about you when you play mediocre against mediocre teams as opposed to how elite teams handle, you know, mediocre non-contenders. Just look at what Tampa Bay did to Chicago last week. They put up 35. They left no doubt at all who the superior team was. The 49ers had an opportunity to do that against the Colts. As you mentioned, 7-0 right out of the gate. Then they get a turnover. Instead of, you know, kicking them while they're down, it's 10-0. You know, it's a field goal. And it was a struggle even to get that after that first down. Like those, that second and third down.
Or it was like 9-0, right? Because he missed the extra point.
Oh, yeah. And they missed the freaking extra point after they're talking about Sly. He went perfect.
He was like 23 for 23 or whatever. Yeah.
And he made one where it would have been good from 60, comes out. And then
misses the 30-something yard extra point.
Oh, my goodness. This is how this game. We should have known right away that's how the game was going to be. But, yeah, they just failed time and time again to take advantage of what they needed to do. And that is probably why I lean that they are not a contender. Of course, they're still close. And luckily for the 49ers, most teams are playing bad football right now, so they are not out of it. Going to have to beat the Bears, but that also means by digging the hole that they're in, now you do have to beat the Cardinals the second time you play them. Now you probably have to beat either the Rams twice or, you know, make sure you beat the Rams once and beat Seattle again, but yeah. Your wiggle room, your margin for error isn't there. Let's talk about some of the mistakes that the team did make, because you just go down the list, it's like, wow. Like almost every possession, whether it's on one side of the ball or the other, they had times to get off the field on defense. Like it seemed like the Colts were behind the chains a lot. It seemed like Carson Wentz was in 2nd and 12, 3rd and 11. But for whatever reason, whether it's a missed tackle, pass interference, penalty.
Dropped interceptions.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness, man. I understand it was raining. I understand the conditions were wet. But some of these throws were hitting the DBs like in the face. You can't drop that. Like, baby it in, catch it with your body, do whatever it takes. But, yeah, the turnovers have been tough to come by, and you can't ask for better opportunities than that. So we mentioned how the Colts fumbled right away, and instead of going up 13-0, it was 9-0 instead. On the next drive, naturally, the Colts score. So 3rd and 11, instead of getting off the field – Josh Norman, pass interference. And then later on in the drive, I don't know if it looked to me like he was staring in the backfield, but he just chased across the formation, gives up a touchdown. Again, that doesn't happen if you get off the field on 3rd and 11 and you don't have a pass interference call. But it just kind of seemed like a spiral effect, domino effect. They couldn't get out of their own way.
Poor execution.
It's on the always, back end. It seems like just as the season's going along, those mistakes are starting to stack up, starting to rack up. And it seems like that has to be on the coach, right? Or what mistakes for you, you know, bothered you the most?
Couple things. I think as a team, their margin for error is so slim, whether it's because they're limited by their quarterback, whether they've got some injuries at key positions like corner. It always seems like every mistake they make is amplified, whether it's on 3rd and long, and there's a pass interference penalty, you're like, oh my God, can't they not get off the field? Or it's on offense, they miss a block, and now this 11-play drive that they had been building up all of a sudden stalls. And ultimately, I think it stems from the fact that, you know, their quarterback just isn't good enough to elevate the rest of the roster, that all these other mistakes are amplified. I'm sure other teams, even good teams, have stretches where, you know, they have a ton of mistakes. I think Tampa Bay is 2nd in defensive pass interference penalties. I think they have 10. I think the 49ers have 11. And you would never think that by looking at Tampa Bay's record, or just if you talk about them, you would never assume them to have that many defensive mistakes, yet they do. And they just seem to overcome it. And I think that's kind of been the 49ers' problems, is their margin for error every week is so small that every mistake is amplified. Every time Josh Norman holds, it's a huge deal. Every time Elijah Mitchell misses a hole, it's a huge deal. Every time, you know, a receiver drops a ball, it's a big deal on 3rd down. And that's just kind of the fate of the team. And that's kind of where they're at with this roster this season. And I think that's just impossible to maintain in the NFL week in and week out. You're going to have games where you're missing guys. You're going to have games where you commit some penalties, et cetera. But you have to find a way to overcome it. And typically that's with your quarterback. And unfortunately with Jimmy Garoppolo, they just haven't been able to do that yet.
For sure. Yeah. And it's, so let's segue into that. Actually, let's talk about Jimmy. Is it over for Jimmy? And when I say that, I mean, once Trey is healthy to play, because it seems like maybe it is going to linger another week. Maybe it's even worse. Who knows? Shanahan said he expects Trey Lance to play on Wednesday, or practice on Wednesday. And if he does, he will sprinkle him into the lineup, whatever that means. Once he's fully healthy, are we going to start seeing Trey go from a series to two, three series to alternating to eventually, hey, the final eight, seven, six, five, whatever, however many games it is, we got to see what you have. We're going to play him no matter what. Sorry, Jimmy, because we know at this point you are not going to get any better. You are continuing to make the same type of mistakes. What do you think happens in that scenario? Is it over for Jimmy G?
Jimmy G, let's go through some of his ranks in 2021. DER, which is defensive adjusted yards above replacement, he's 24th. DVOA, 22nd. QBR, 29th. Air yards, 31st. EPA per play, 22nd. Success rate, 19th. Completion percentage over expected, 24th. And I'm not a big PFF guy, but their grades, he's 30th. So he's basically been a bottom 10 quarterback all season. And so I think it's wraps for Jimmy Garoppolo. And I think it's more about Trey Lance's health. A lot of people were shocked when Kyle Shanahan named Garoppolo the starter this week against the Bears. But I do think if you're Trey Lance, a rookie, A, you want to make sure he's 100% healthy with that knee, especially just given the way he plays as a runner. You don't want him to be limited by that. You don't want that injury to get worse because he is the future. So you want to make sure he's 100%. And the second thing, you don't want to have him limited in practice and then just throw him out there. You want to give him a full week of reps with the first team, fully installing the game plan, et cetera, before you do let him play. I would have thought that this would have been a good game, you know, to get him incorporated just because you're playing another team with a rookie quarterback. You probably don't need score a lot of points in this game to come out with a win maybe. So I thought it would have been a good opportunity, but I think it's more about Trey Lance's health, getting him there 100%. So I do think when he gets there in a week, two, whatever it is, I do think he becomes the starter. And I think the 49ers are protecting Jimmy Garoppolo's trade value or whatever remains of it by saying that he's their guy, he's the starter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and not making it about Trey Lance's health. I think it's more of a PR game, even though most people can see right through it, than admitting the truth. I think that's how they're trying to play it, because I don't think after what Kyle Shanahan called the worst game of the season for Jimmy Garoppolo, he comes back the next day after watching that film and saying, yep, he's the starter, and I want to ride with him.
Yeah, that would be – I was surprised that he said that, because the question really didn't even ask that. They're asking about, who's going to be the quarterback and what have you seen from Jimmy for him to remain the starter. And he said, yeah, well, he did have his worst game, and he led with that. It was like, oh, wow, tell us how you really feel. But we all have eyes, and we are all seeing that. And some of us, earlier than others, others are – you have no choice
to come out
and see that yet. But when you're reeling off just his stats and where he ranks among the other quarterbacks in the NFL, he's still turning the ball over. Like, knowing that's how he plays as the quarterback, you're still having to coach around the interceptions, the fumbles, whether it's holding the ball in the pocket, whether it's not moving in the pocket. There are a lot of parts about the quarterback that the numbers can't even capture that he's leaving on the field. And that's what makes it so tough to watch, because there's so much talent on this team. The offensive line is playing well. Like, there are clean pockets too. And that's even more frustrating, because all year, last year, we heard, well, it's the offensive line's fault. It's the offensive line's fault. Like, there's no protection. There's no this. No, there's plenty of time to make plays now. And for whatever reason, again, to be fair to Jimmy, there are times where the receivers just dropped the ball. That happened a couple of times this game where they just didn't make plays for him. And, the big holding call, but there's times. On Dwelly, where, Brandon Ayuk was wide open down the field, and it's a walk-in touchdown. But still, most of the problems, the root of the problem remains unchanged, at least in my mind, from what I can see. So, yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how they handle this. It does depend on Trey Lance's health. And Do you think Jimmy is going to be on the team after the trade deadline? Like, is there any value for him? Will a team come calling for him? You know, whether that's the Browns are an obvious fit, you know, if Baker's injury lingers, or, you know, whoever else is fighting for a playoff spot and they need a quarterback.
I don't think it's like baseball or basketball where teams make a splash move at the trade deadline because they sense that they're like a player away, especially the position like quarterback, which takes a full offseason to install your offense, learn the plays, et cetera, et cetera. I know the Niners made the trade for Garoppolo before the trade deadline, but the situations were so different, right? They were a, whatever, 0-7, 0-8 team when they made that trade. So I can't see a contender looking at Jimmy Garoppolo, what he's done this season, what he's put on tape with his injury, and, you know, picking up the remainder of his salary next season and making a trade that, you know, would really interest the 49ers. So I think he's going to be on the team. I just imagine he'll be holding a clipboard on the sidelines for Trey Lance whenever Lance gets healthy and, you know, is able to play. I don't think that's going to be after the 49ers are eliminated from playoff contention. I think it's going to be within the next few weeks, but I could be wrong.
So Kyle Shanahan kind of changed his tune on Trey Lance's injury. At first, you know, it was 1 to 2 weeks, and he'll be right back out there. Now he's hopeful that he's going to be out there Wednesday, and we talked about it a little bit. But do you think there's any chance that this injury does linger, that Lance isn't able to return on Wednesday, and that he's out for, you know, Sunday's game against the Bears? Just could you imagine the scrutiny he's going to get? Because they've had a tendency and a history where, you know, they say the injury exists and it ends up being 2 to 3 weeks longer. Javon Kinlaw is a great example right now.
Trent Williams.
Their first round possession. Yeah, Trent Williams. Too often, way too often has happened. What do you think happens with Lance?
I think the craziest part about Trey Lance is you didn't even know when he got hurt in the game, right? Finished the game. They had the press conference Sunday afternoon. No one says anything about an injury. And I think it's the next day. They were like, oh, he has a knee sprain. And then they said it was like he may be able to play this week. And now it's turned into like a big injury, I think is what Kyle Shanahan called it, bigger, major. So part of me feels like he's extending this injury to protect Trey Lance a little bit from himself, making sure that he's 100% before he really inserts him into the lineup. And then the other part of me is just like, is this just Kyle Shanahan, you know, originally downplaying an injury because of their injury history as a team and then realizing, oh man, it's actually a bigger deal. So there's two sides of the coin there. And I think it's a little bit of both. But in general, I think I would lean on the side that, yeah, they downplayed the injury and then they realized like, ah, shit, it's actually a bigger deal than what it is. And now they're being extremely cautious about it because he's a first round quarterback future, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's another interesting angle. Just to, again, if he's hurt, you can't tell me I have to play him. So you're protecting right. yourself in a sense too. All right. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Seth Wickersham's new information on the 49ers and their other loving Mac Jones story, as well as the Bears and why it's not all Kyle Shanahan's fault. All right, we are back. And again, I said we're going to talk about Seth Wickersham's new quote, and I don't know if it's new for everybody. It's essentially, I imagine, we are just going to get more and more information from his book, and people are just going to start spinning it to articles, which is smart. I mean, that's how the media works. So, Akash, he has the quote up. Tell us what to know about this situation.
Yeah, let me just read out exactly the snippet out of Seth Wickersham's book. Basically says, still, the long-term hole at the game's most important position hovered over them being the Patriots. In the days leading up to the draft, rumors swirled around the league that the Patriots would trade for Garoppolo, sending Belichick's original plan replacement for Brady back to him. San Francisco seemed to have backed itself into an impossible corner, moving up to draft a rookie quarterback, Trey Lance, while holding on to an expensive temporary starter who had a no-trade clause in his contract, giving him the power over his future, which Jimmy Garoppolo had. And then there was an informal call between a high-level representative of the Patriots, which, you know, could have been their director of scouting, whatever, and a high-level 49ers official, maybe an Adam Peter or someone like that, sure. Trying to determine what Garoppolo's price was. And New England wondered if a second rounder would suffice because they thought it would be even for the 2017 trade when the 49ers gave up a two. But the 49ers said that they wouldn't take less than a first-round pick. For the moment, they wanted Garoppolo to be the starter in 2021. And the Patriots eventually said, we'd rather have one of the first round quarterbacks than Garoppolo at a first round price. And they just, you know, the talks basically broke off from there. So what do you think that the 49ers basically said? No, we won't take a second round pick, even though it wasn't really an official offer. we only want a first round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo after last season.
All right, so when it said San Francisco seemed to back itself into an impossible corner, moving up to draft a quarterback while trying to hold on to an expensive temporary starter, does that mean it happened, like this whole conversation happened before or after the 49ers traded up? I feel like that's important to distinguish.
I think it sounds like it happened after.
Right. And with knowing that, it sounds like New England made a contingency plan. You know, if we can't get our guy, okay, fine, whatever. We'll trade you Jimmy for a second rounder. I wonder how, you know, how do I want to put this? I don't think that it reads as harsh as it does, is what I really want to say. I really don't blame the 49ers for saying no, because, you know, just in any bargain, in negotiation, you're not going to say, no, we'll do this. You want to lead with, yeah, you know, it's only a first round. It's first round or nothing. So if the Patriots say yes, all right, cool. We'll take their first. We'll be able to ship Jimmy, do whatever it is, blah, blah, blah. But that didn't happen. So that's why I think it was more of a contingency for the, you know, for the Patriots. You know, if they didn't get their guy, then they would call back the 49ers and offer a second round pick. But that's as deep as I want to go with this, because I don't think it's anything more than that. I can see why you could easily get upset about it, because what? You didn't take a second round pick for Jimmy G, blah, blah, blah. But I don't know. We don't know how far the talks got. It could have just been a high and buy. Hey, we want this. Hey, we'll hit you back in a week. We'll call you in 2 weeks if this doesn't work out, blah, blah, blah. None of that could have happened. So I don't it's a lot of reckless speculation, and it's a great snippet because you can spin it to like 25 different ways. And there's probably some truth to all of those, but I'm taking that as a contingency plan and nothing more than that. What about you?
49ers Twitter was losing its mind over the quote. Like, how could you not make the trade for a second round pick? What, you know, flip side and counterpoint argument. If you're the 49ers and it's like late March, early April, like before the draft, and you've basically re-signed a bunch of your guys, you can't necessarily use the $25 million in cap space that Jimmy Garoppolo is taking up. You have a feeling that you're going to take Trey Lance. You think that he's not going to be ready out of the gate. You've got this team that's ready to compete. You're only getting a second round pick back for him. So you can talk yourself into, let's just play Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, maybe he plays really well. Maybe he plays like 2019. Maybe he plays better than 2019. He stays healthy. And we can flip him for a first, right? There'll be teams in the offseason that'll need a quarterback, a Pittsburgh, a Houston, somebody. And maybe we can flip him to one of those teams for a first, for a late first, instead of this second round pick. And I'm sure that was their thinking. And I know Ben Albright, who's been on this podcast, has kind of alluded to that fact that the 49ers are trying to recoup some assets. It looks dumb in hindsight now, because he's played six games and he's played like a bottom 10 quarterback. He's been hurt already. And, you know, his trade value probably isn't a second round pick anymore. It's probably more like a mid round pick, especially given his age, given the fact that he's got 1 year left on his deal, all that kind of stuff. So now, you know, 6 weeks in, of course, yeah, you'd take that second round pick. But I'm sure in that moment, the way Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were viewing it, they'd probably like, hell no. You know, this is high level negotiation. We're going to say no, we'll take a first. But, you know, if something like an Aaron Rodgers had worked out draft day, they would flip Jimmy Garoppolo for a second round pick, right? So that's kind of how I viewed it, that it wasn't anything serious. And it just looks bad in hindsight now that we're like 6 weeks into the season and we've seen how Garoppolo's played.
Yeah, I wonder how many people are upset now, but back then they were willing to keep Jimmy, and they probably figured the 49ers would be like 4-2 or, you know, 5-1 at worst. Because if, you know, we were to go back to the spring and early summer, everybody thought the 49ers would roll through the first half of their schedule. So it's always hindsight. It's all hindsight's 2020. It's easy to say, you know, that they should have done this or they shouldn't have done this now. You can make strong arguments that they did overvalue not only Jimmy, but their roster. And that's why the expectations were what they were coming in from the fan base. And I think that is fair. But in this sense, that does not make much sense to me. So, all right, back to the Colts game and why it's not all Shanahan's fault. And this, when I say this, there's just so many offensive mistakes. And, you know, we mentioned on the other side of the ball how, you know, the tackling, the pass interferences, the penalties, like they did have some bad breaks. But there were some there was a lot of yards left on the field. Let's just say that. And they had some opportunities to score touchdowns. We mentioned that the Ayuk play where there was a holding call on Ross Dwelly. I feel like Jimmy Garoppolo could have stepped up in the pocket and just moved around a little bit better than he did. Yep, he had, again, there was nobody else. There was no reason to run that far to the right. I think he took like 8 steps. I've never seen like an 8-step rollout, so I'm not sure what was going on there. That's not the only play. So Deebo Samuel had a third down. It was 3rd and 12. His mentality is, I'm going to get every yard I can every time. Every time the ball's in my hand, I'm going to maximize the play. It was raining, so first of all, you're never going to complain when he has that mentality because that's who he is. That's why he is who he is. But in the rain, you're probably not going to be able to fight through 3 different guys. So the Colts stand him up. He fumbles, and that's when the game, that's when everything gets out of hand. That was a costly, costly play that you just can't blame Kyle Shanahan for. The interception where you mentioned Sanu, the ball goes – people are also blaming Jimmy for that. I don't – to me, the ball goes right through Deebo's hands. Like, I don't know why you're mad at Jimmy for that. The ball hits him right where it's supposed to. It's not his fault that Deebo caught the ball with his body, bounced off his shoulder pads into the Colts' hands, and they were able to score a pick six. That's not on the quarterback to me, so – both of those are – so we have the fumble from Deebo. We have – there was also another drop from Deebo on a tunnel screen earlier in the game where if he catches that ball, he probably scores. Let's say he doesn't score. At worst, he gets 30 yards. There was a couple of those plays too where, man, if they just catch the ball, some good things happen. So I was going through the plays. I was seeing just – it's like, wow, again. So maybe you can blame the head coach for the continued mistakes, but as far as the play calls go and the designs, not on the head ball coach.
I just thought the one thing with Kyle Shanahan is that early in the game, Elijah Mitchell was ripping off runs, and there was that one drive where I think he went to 3 straight passes. It was like an incomplete, and then maybe they didn't gain much on second down, and then the third down was to Hasty, and Hasty fell. I believe were like 3 sequence of plays, and so it's situations like those where I wonder, like, what's going through his head, right? You're running the ball so well. It's like he's trying to outthink the room a little bit on those plays. And so I would question him there. But questioning play calls, we've talked about this, is nitpicking because the coach is setting up something else. He's thinking through, you know, 8 different things in that moment. So I hate questioning play calls, even though I feel like we do it a lot. But it just seems like Kyle Shanahan's been out of a rhythm for whatever reason. And just like any player, I feel like he's just going through a little bit of a slump in terms of his play calling and just finding rhythm. And he admitted to it as much, right, post-game on Sunday where he was basically like, yeah, just haven't found my rhythm, whether that's mixing in Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo, in and out with different quarterbacks, et cetera. So hopefully he's able to find that moving forward. I don't think it's all his fault, though. It's just the execution on both sides, the mistakes, the penalties, the drops, turnovers, all that stuff that are just killing them. And it's like a lack of focus. And that's just stuff we haven't seen from the 49ers under Kyle Shanahan in years past. Even when the talent was lackluster, they seemed to execute to the best of their abilities. And we always thought, it, you know, if they had better talent or if they weren't hurt or whatever. But this season has just been different where they just have not been a very complete team so far. And that typically falls on the head ball coach.
If you're talking about the same play that I think you are, it was the first down pass was to Trent Sherfield. So earlier in the game, he actually hit Deebo Samuel on the same play if you just flip it to the other side. And good play callers do this all the time. They'll run the same play over and over and over and just, you know, window dress it differently, run it to a different side. So they hit it with Deebo earlier in the game. This time they flip it, and now Debo's a decoy. He runs off, and Trent Sherfield comes across the field. He is open. Jimmy throws it behind him by like 3 yards. So I don't blame Shanahan for wanting to throw the ball there just because – you know, play action, you want to, they know you're going to run the ball. It worked. They sucked the defense up, but it was just an inaccurate pass. And maybe he has to know his quarterback's not going to hit that throw in these conditions, which makes you even more handcuffed as a caller. And I know that he doesn't want to be predictable and he probably wants to break tendencies. Just tough for me to blame the play caller when, you know, the players aren't executing in that situation. Because again, you know, there's plenty of times throughout this game and throughout the season where you can blame Kyle, but I didn't think that this one was on him as much as I initially thought is probably the best way to put it. All right. So let's talk about the Bears. have to have it. If there's any shot of the playoffs, this is it right here. You can't lose to the Bears.
Speaking of play clothes, I got blamed.
Right. Matt Nagy, who unfortunately tested positive for COVID. Who knows if he's even going to be in the building. Soldier Field, Bears, the total on the game is 40 points. That is the lowest on, you know, in the whole slate. And there are some bad matches. So that tells you Vegas either doesn't think highly of these two teams, or they know, you know, rookie quarterback, whether it's Justin Fields, or just Jimmy playing, they're not expecting a lot of points. It's going to be close, probably going to be ugly, probably going to be low scoring. If you cannot beat the Bears, this is not a good team. I mentioned how, you know, contenders play against mediocre teams. Tampa Bay stomped the Bears. Like, they did not have a chance last week. They don't have a great offensive line. You can pretty much do whatever you want to them on the other side of the ball. Khalil Mack, yes, but outside of that, they leave a lot to be desired. I don't know. I don't know what to do here, man, because everything tells you the 49ers should win. Everything has told you that in most of their games this season, but you can't plan for turnover. You can't plan for penalties, and maybe that's on us. Maybe that's on the coaches for, you know, not expecting – or for essentially expecting different results, and they're doing the same thing. What do you think happens? Do the 49ers get off the snide here? What's going to happen?
I think the 49ers defense dominates. That Bears offensive line stinks. And Tampa Bay had its way with Justin Fields. That coaching staff has not put him in a position to succeed so far this season. We were high on him pre-draft, still are, but he's just been put in a tough spot. Given, you know, behind that offensive line with the playmakers that he's got, I just think it's a tall order, even if they're at home. So I think the 49ers defense, especially that pass rush, is going to be in the backfield all game long. I bet they create a couple turnovers, short fields. Jimmy Garoppolo had his first start in Chicago, I think, in 2017. Come full circle, maybe with his last start with the team, maybe. And I just think they execute a little bit better. I think it's a low-scoring game. I don't think it's the over-under. I think I would bet the under. I think they win like a 17-13 game, like a 20-13 game, just something low scoring, just something where you come out of it like, man, you don't feel real good about it as a team, but I do think they win the game and cover the spread.
I want to say yes, but I've been wrong on them a lot.
4 weeks in a row?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I watch a lot of this team. I feel like I know the roster well. I feel like I know how the players will perform. In my head, they should blow the Bears out. But that's not going to happen because there are going to be just endless mistakes and continuing to shoot themselves in the foot because that's just who they are right now. I do want to give credit to D'Amico Ryans because it does seem like he has a plan and he sticks to his plan. I don't think it's on him for the way the secondary is played. I think he got a bad hand. And there's only so much you can do with, you know, 30-plus-year-old cornerbacks who can't really run. So when they can't run, they tend to grab, which is something that they've gotten away with most of their careers. The Colts were not good on third down. They converted them on long situations, but I don't think that was a play caller issue as well. I don't think Ryan's going to have any issue slowing down the Bears. I do think, actually, the cornerbacks match up well, even with Allen Robinson. Nick Bosa is going to be Nick Bosa. I think this is going to be one of those games where it's like, oh, wow, that's Nick Bosa, because Justin Fields does hold the ball at times, and that should come back to haunt him in this game. I don't know what the score is going to be. It is going to be low. It's going to be ugly. I think they'll win, but again, it's just been – I've been so off on this team that it's tough to figure out, and I think that's probably goes back to being deeper on – you know, what's going on behind closed doors? Who is this team? What is the direction? So maybe we'll find out this week. Hopefully we do, because after this week, you know, if you lose this one, then, ooh-wee, man, the pitchforks. If you thought they were bad this week, losing to a rookie quarterback would be probably – it wouldn't be the end, but
– rookie quarterback would passed on.
It might be for Jimmy. It would be tough, though, and – like if you think it's negative now, just imagine a five consecutive losses in a row with two divisional opponents on deck. All right, that'll do it for us. Please rate, subscribe, review, leave us 5 stars wherever it is that you get your podcast. I will be in Chicago. I will be enjoying this one. I was hoping to enjoy a pair of rookie quarterbacks going at it. That will not be the case. Still, I want to see how Jimmy plays when he goes back home, how the defense handles a rookie quarterback who can run. I think they'll be able to take advantage of Fields. Might make some plays. He doesn't really – he pushes the ball downfield, but they don't really do much on offense. Like, they're pretty handcuffed with the way that their offensive line plays, so that you would think in theory the defensive line has so much success that they'll be able to control and contain Chicago. So that's it from us. Follow me on Twitter, KP_show. Hopefully the next time we're talking, it is after a win, because that would be nice. It has not happened in a while. Akash, where can we find you?
Follow me at Twitter, at AKASHANAB. Hopefully the 49ers win this week and we can talk about a W. Until then, go Niners.